if you're not drunk, ladies and gentlemen, get ready to get drunk up. Let's do it.
I'm trying to think. What? Okay. Hello and welcome to episode 51 of I'm Trying to Think. I'm Chuck Warner. With me as always is Dave Stern.
Oh, hi. All
right.
Hello.
I'm just thinking there that we need a hype man, you know? Does anybody know Little John? Can we get him in the studio? And the correct number of shots is 16. Just so everybody knows. Yeah. All right.
Did you count?
Yeah, that's 16. That's 16, and then they go another 16. But anyways, all right, that keeps breaking in. There. Do you know? Does anybody know Little John out there? Any friends of Little John who are fans of the show?
I don't know.
I'd take a Little John impersonator.
I think you're looking too far outside for hype, because for starters, bringing in anyone from outside, one, I think that might compromise sort of the vibe, what we've got here, yeah. And two, that shit ain't free.
Yeah, no.
I'm not made of money. Are you made of money?
I'm looking for volunteers, obviously.
Man, I'm just saying.
They come in and be like, ladies and gentlemen, if you ain't drunk, well, I would advise not listening to the show drunk, as sometimes they talk about philosophical concepts which may be difficult to grasp when you are inebriated.
That's
not gold, but
bronze, maybe tin. I don't
know. Anyways, LMFAO with Lil Jon with their song Shots, which I find charming.
It's a song,
and it takes
the parts of crunkness. Except the part where someone who's good at rapping is rapping, are in that song.
What you may not know about that song is that one of the gentlemen singing is a relative of, or is the brother of Rockwell, famous for singing with Michael Jackson. You know, he's the guy who doesn't sound good in the song Who's Watching
Me?
Yeah,
singing with Michael Jackson is a little bit strong, because he's basically talking kind of like a bad Vincent Price impersonation. I don't
yeah.
know, something.
Well,
no,
know
no, no,
doing.
It's not Vincent Price. It's just, I was just thinking that because the Michael Jackson connection put my brain towards Vincent
That's
Price.
That's understandable.
But no, basically Michael Jackson is singing in that song and Rockwell is going, and talking like that for some reason.
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
I'm just an average man.
It's kind of, you know, it sounds cool.
It's a little bit British-y? It's not British, but it's British-y. I don't know.
British-y?
You can't say British-ish.
You could say British-ish.
I choose not to.
Okay, you choose not to, but I'm just telling you that you can say it.
I still have made a choice, Chuck. I still have made a choice.
If you choose not to say it, you still have made a choice.
Exactly.
But what you may not know also is the father of one of the people in LMFAO. LMFAO, yes. And the other is the grandson of the man responsible for Motown Records, Berry Gordy, who brought us The Temptations, Marvin Gaye,
Stevie Wonder,
Gladys Knight,
The Supremes,
Commodores,
the Marvelettes.
Rick James,
oh,
DeBarge,
you're
I got a list here, Lionel Richie.
Man, there's at least 20 classic Motown acts you could have said before DeBarge. I'm just going
to
throw that out there. ABC, BBD.
Boys to Men. I don't know if they did BBD. I don't think so.
That's just the next part of the song.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. ABC, BBD.
Well, regardless.
East Coast Jammin'.
East Coast Jammin', yeah.
It's Motown Philly, back again.
Back again. But, yeah, so they're... so it
DeBarge,
just teaches you...
Man.
DeBarge is awesome, man.
Every classic Motown group of the 60s, and you went to DeBarge.
Weird Al did a parody of a DeBarge song, ergo DeBarge is important.
None of us is questioning Here's Johnny.
Yeah,
none of
right.
us.
So anyways.
DeBarge.
DeBarge is awesome.
DeBarge.
So that just goes to show you when your father is the man behind Motown Records, you get to do whatever you want. Pretty much.
Yeah, you know what strikes me as weird about that? This is apart from the whole, you know, Gordy family, you know, sons and grandsons awkwardly trying to give themselves music careers despite the fact that they don't have talent just because they have basically the ultimate in connections.
Yeah.
Because that's not that odd. That's utterly unsurprising. To me, what's surprising about that is, if I understand it correctly, basically, that is a crunk hip-hop duo of a guy and his uncle.
Yeah, or a guy and his nephew from the uncle's perspective.
Yeah, but that seems weird. That seems really weird to me. Like, can you imagine just, like, running around, basically, most people who have the type of uncle who's going to run around being like, you know, yeah, we're going to get fucked up, ah, like, that's just the guy who's awkward at family gatherings. Like, that's not someone you want to hang out with. And that's definitely, for me at least, not someone who is just like, okay, I need to build my music career. I'm going to do it with these, you know, crunk songs about, you know, getting drunk, getting fucked up. I need to call my uncle, because that's who I want to embark on this musical journey with. That seems really strange.
Sky Blue is, let's see, 25.
Uh-huh.
And his uncle, Red Foo, is, 36, 30, 35?
Okay, so they're close enough in age that it's not like an uncle,
he'll be 36
like,
this year.
It's not like your 56-year-old uncle.
No, it's not like... They're like 10 years apart.
Okay, so is that sort of sprawling family thing where you wind up having an uncle
Barry
who's more
Gordy
of a contemporary?
Has had like 80 different kids to 57 women.
Well, he founded Motown Records.
He gets to do what he wants.
He put DeBarge in the universe.
He made DeBarge
all the pussy he wants.
He made DeBarge a household name where that household is, you know, possibly mine and.
And DeBarge's household?
And DeBarge's. And Weird Al probably still talks about DeBarge every once in a while. I'm trying to think as a podcast sponsored by the Foundation Institute. Check foundation-institute.org. You can fan us on Facebook. Facebook.com/I'm trying to think. Can contact us via email. contact@I'mtryingtothink.com. And you should. Damn it. Also twitter.com/I'm trying to think. But isn't Twitter dead now? Don't you pretty much use it to tweet pictures of your penis, and that's about it?
Not me personally, but that's what I hear from the news.
Yeah, I mean, once politicians start using something, that's like mom and dad doing it. It's uncool at that point.
Yeah, it's over. We got to find the new thing. Is there anything out there with a terrible name that we all need to do and it's missing vowels? I don't know. Plarkzon.
Flickr's already
Zarquid.
Something. Ooh, Zarquig Day. Dave, that's you're under the next $1 million day idea there. What does Zarquig do?
The social...
Yeah, obviously.
Environment.
Viral.
For sharing viruses. Done. Social, viral,
they
game
have
over.
That already.
Game over.
They have that already, Dave. It's called Interstate 70.
Ho!
Hello. STD Corridor. Did you know that?
Hey, STD... If you drop some vowels from that, I bet that domain is free.
STD Corridor?
STD Corridor.
Curter.
That's a maybe not $1 million idea, but that's at least a couple hundred thousand.
We already have the name for that. It's Zarquig. What was it?
Zarquig?
Zarquig?
Zarquag?
Either one.
I don't know. These could all be different things. We may have said $3 million ideas, by which I mean terrible names.
Tweeting pictures of your penis. Let's talk about it.
It's evergreen.
We
you know,
keep
we,
talking
we
about
thought
never.
We were done talking about
you
know, people taking dick
pics.
And then, you know, pretty much in between episodes, you know, Anthony Weiner thing, it blows up, goes down.
Yeah, it comes. I mean, we didn't even have a chance at that one. That's just, this bi-weekly schedule is killing us. I mean, as far as
talking about Anthony Weiner in detail
like that, yeah. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
I'm comfortable
it was just like
with
the Charlie Sheen thing. By the time we even got to it was over.
Well, that was because at that point we were on like every 6-week schedule because there were problems.
We can't. I'm just saying we can't survive in this 24-hour news cycle.
Well, what we have to do is we have to, you know, much like I think any media that doesn't suck probably has to do, is we have to rise above the 24-hour news cycle.
All right, I'm above it.
Perfect.
Because I don't want to get under it, so I crawled up.
No, you'll get crushed.
Yeah, that's heavy.
You'll get crushed. It's
There's
a machine.
Like 48 networks or something. Not even talking about the Weather Channel.
And the Weather Channel was mostly about Anthony Weiner in the past 2 weeks, wasn't it?
I can't stand the Weather Channel and their 24-hour weather cycle. That's BS. That's not journalism.
I don't know. If it wasn't for the Weather Channel, I would not have learned while I was at a restaurant on vacation, which was for some reason showing the Weather Channel, I would not have learned what was going on. There were tornadoes. There was a giant fire that made things disgusting on vacation for a while, for like a night. It was just smoke everywhere because there was like a giant fire on a nearby island. So the Weather Channel was useful. So I'm going to say thumbs up Weather Channel.
Thumbs down Weather Channel. Ooh. Just more of the lamestream media talking about their liberal biased weather. Oh, look, weather hurts poor people. Come on, Dave, come on.
You know, we were joking a little bit earlier. You know, we were having fun and joshing about million-dollar ideas.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, conservative Weather Channel, I think you just got it.
Conservative Weather Channel?
Yeah. If you're looking for a million-dollar idea. I mean, the thing to
Who's
do...
Who's that guy that I should talk to? Roger Ailes? There you go. Roger
that's
Ailes.
That's the one. That's the one.
Hey, do you want the weather to have a right-wing slant? Call me.
Yeah, I mean, what works now, you know, the future of media is building increasingly hermetically sealed bubbles.
Yeah.
Where you don't have to have, not only do you not have to have your thoughts and opinions challenged, but everything you see and hear and consume, regardless of, you know, its relevance to, you know, politics or your worldviews, will reinforce your political worldviews.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
So, yeah, Conservative Weather Channel.
I'm just saying that if you give me a million-dollar contract, I can also lie about what I actually believe to suit the prefabricated tale of your, you know, network.
I'm just saying, find out where there's tornadoes happening. Find out how much more gay stuff was happening there.
That's
there
what I'm
you
saying.
Go.
That's actually going to be bad because the faggotry agenda has already done that research, and it turns out they're not related.
Hold on. You're going on kind of a fact-based tangent here. I don't think you fully grasp
the
ideas
of
the...
Also, I used the word faggotry.
That was also wrong, yeah, but I was just trying to ignore that
no,
and let that go away.
No, that is all that's right, because homosexual agenda is very dry. It doesn't sound very... It doesn't grab you. Faggotry. That's a grabby word. And as far as I know, not offensive.
How far do you know? I'm not sure you know far
not
enough.
Not far. Admittedly, I don't... I mean, you know, I don't
I'm
use
not
that
sure
word
you know far enough
in common
in
conversation,
case.
So no one has had the chance to correct me on it. But my thought is, not offensive. Sounds delightful and dandy.
If you're just talking on a
and
syllable
also,
level.
There you go right there. Delightful and dandy. Now that sounds like a euphemism for homosexuality.
Yeah, let's go with that.
No, because that's... I like... The words delightful and dandy just meaning what they mean.
Too late. It's gay now.
No, it's gay. Now it's gay. Nothing you can do about it. Oh,
yeah,
well.
Let's stick with that.
Delightful and dandy.
Yeah. Because I think you were barking up a tree that's wronger
the
than you seem
tree.
To think it is. Oh, no.
No, you don't.
No.
Not a fan.
No.
All right. Well, anyways.
Delightful and dandy.
The point is that... if you pay me a couple million dollars, I will say faggotry on network news channels. No problem.
Well, basic cable.
Yeah.
Basic cable.
Yeah.
They're not letting that shit on the network because it's offensive.
Is it?
Yeah.
Again, nobody corrected me. Nobody corrected me, Dave.
I don't see how that happens.
I make up new curse words all the time, and I have to wait for somebody to be like, no, that dude, that is not right. You can't say that.
That's not a new one.
And I'm like,
that's old.
I'm sorry.
That's been done.
I don't know that it is. Has faggotry been a word in the past? I thought.
Yeah,
it,
yeah.
I thought
faggotry
it was
is the
fun,
Twitter of words, man. It's over.
I thought it was
over.
I thought it was a fun twist on an old theme.
No, it's been done.
Can we do something with homosexual that makes it sound more interesting? I don't know. Give it a more
homosexual.
Market it up. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
No,
you
market
like
it
a Latin
up.
Spin?
Like
Latin
give it,
spin.
Give it that marketing buzz. You know. Like monetize, you know, which is not like is a dumb word, right?
Oh, so you want to take the word homosexual and make it dumber?
Yeah, make it dumber, make it real dumb, like so, like dumb.
Like something
and meaningless
you can say
and
in
empty.
A meeting.
Yeah, and empty. It has to be really empty.
Okay, hold on. We got to get
hollow.
We got to get into the sort of place where
you
we can do
really
this.
Get into the zone.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm in a meeting.
You're in a meeting.
For, I'm going to say, an upscale brand magazine.
Right, and you're branding.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're talking about brand awareness.
We're a lifestyle magazine. We're talking about brand awareness. We need to monetize. Hold on.
You're strategic planning. This is a strategic planning meeting about your branding.
Okay. So we need to monetize.
Right. Sustainability.
Our target demographic.
Sustainability is the issue.
Of homo.
Well, no, I'm not talking about, like, we actually need. I'm not even saying that homosexuals are your target audience here. But somehow. There's a need to apply homosexuality to your brand.
Oh, so you're just trying to, okay, make it a verb.
Right, verbatize it. See, like I just did with
Yeah. Well, I mean, the obvious way is homosexualize, but that's not catchy.
No, that's a word already, I think.
Homotize?
Homotize is pretty good, but you missed the sex in there, so. Homosexize?
Well, in fairness, if you're missing the sex, then that's pretty good, because that...
Because sex is interesting.
No, because that would be also be how, you know, that's exactly how homosexuality was marketed, you know, from about the 90s to maybe 4 years ago. It was completely sexless. So
yeah, that's true.
That was homotizing. Yeah, Will and Grace. Homotized television.
Well, to be fair...
Because it was gay, but there was no sex.
Well, to be fair, it's Will and Grace, and Will is gay, so there's not going to be any sex. You'd have to have Will and Joe.
It had multiple characters.
Then
there were more than the two characters. It wasn't like a two-man. It wasn't like a vaudevillian comedy team where there were only two people on the stage.
I thought it was like an Abbott Costello thing.
No,
I have not
no.
watched the show, Dave. Have not seen.
My understanding
the show.
Is that it was like most sitcoms. Rather than being a two-person variety show, it built a fictional world in which there were many characters who had humorous. Situations happen to them.
So you're saying they...
It was a comedy of situations.
They homo-gayitized the sitcom, but did not give it any of the actual... Now, Dave, I don't know if you've seen a lot of sitcoms. Like, for instance, let's say the one of the longest-running shows that in recent history, everybody likes Raymond. Everybody loves Raymond. They actually feel more strongly about him than just liking
him. First
thought. Everybody loves Raymond. You got your Ray Romano... He has a wife, and they have kids. No sex, though, Dave. No sex. It was discussed as a topic, but they, don't show any penetration.
Well, yes.
I assume that Will and Grace, Will had male suitors. Or are you saying he did not? He was just gay in a vacuum.
I'm not.
But there was
a
another
Will
gay
and
guy
Grace expert
played by that little skinny, annoying freak.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not calling him a freak on account of. Any orientation he might have. I'm calling him a freak because, my goodness, where do you get a voice that puts needles in my spine? I don't know where you get that except Freaktown.
All right. I will say, while I've been put in this place in this conversation, I wouldn't call myself a Will and Grace expert, but my understanding is... You know,
I will call myself a Will and Grace expert.
With even less grounding.
I am a Will and Grace expert.
Okay, fine then. If that's the
standard...
If I'm
going to work for Fox News, I need to get this sort of thing down.
If that's the standard we're setting, then by knowing slightly more about it than you, I am a Will and Grace ultra expert.
Do you know who else I know a lot about? The rapper Common.
Oh, gosh.
So Will and Grace homo-gayitize America. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're prepared to say, Dave?
Yeah, I'm willing to go with that, sort of.
All right, let's just get
the conversation's kind of gotten away from
me. I don't really want to talk about Will and Grace anymore, and nobody wants to listen to us talk about Will and Grace. So let's rewind all the way back to dick pics.
God, that is what we were talking about, isn't it?
That's an important thing, dick pics.
Okay.
Only because we decided it was.
Well, only because it keeps happening.
It does keep happening.
We don't keep talking about dick pics
there
because we're
question.
Interested in dick
Anthony
pics.
Anthony Weiner.
I'm not interested in dick pics. It just
Anthony
keeps
Weiner
coming up
does
as a,
not
as a
live in a vacuum,
topic
so
of conversation.
He knows. He goes into all this knowing. I mean, even if it's only the last few months, he went in knowing that the Brett Favre thing had happened. That you don't even need to see your face in the dick pic and people will call you out. Of course, Brett Favre doesn't lose any jobs over it or anything, does he?
Nope.
So, maybe he was like, well, you know, Brett Favre didn't lose his job. I can continue with this behavior. Let's talk about a few issues here first. Let's just get through the easy stuff.
Straight to the heart of the matter.
Do you care about Anthony Weiner posting or sending strange ladies his dingus.
Not really.
No, no. Would you care if he was your representative?
Probably a bit more, only because, one, some of those people were basically, it wasn't people who were striking, and this is my understanding of the issue, it wasn't just like a casual conversation, then it gets flirty, blah, 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 dick pics. It was like, basically, a woman would come with sort of a political issue or possibly a constituent issue, and then things go to dick pic town.
But, I mean, if he's corresponding with a stripper or whatever from Las Vegas or something,
there was
like
also
that.
I think...
Then, I mean, there's
There were different issues here that we need to be careful not to cross, because
no,
there's
Dave,
dick pics to a stripper.
We do not need to be careful to not cross these issues. A, I know nothing about what he was actually tweeting or talking to these women about, but I am an expert on it.
Right.
So, my thought is... Nobody cares. Moving on. Next topic.
Fine.
Next topic.
Fine.
Okay. So nobody cares about him tweeting the pictures for our argument here.
Man, I've got to say, that's an argument that's pretty disprovable by facts, but let's keep going. I want to see where you're going with this.
So, secondly, so he resigns for no reason.
Yes, if we're accepting your first premise, then yes, he resigned for no reason.
Resigns for no reason.
Mysteriously out of the blue.
Mysteriously out of the blue. So, I'm just saying, Dave, why does anybody else in the world continue to take dick pics?
I don't know why they started. I mean, it seems really illogical. I mean, my guess is that... starters, I think people a certain generation and above don't really understand that the internet is forever and the internet isn't private.
Yeah.
No matter how much you want the internet to be private.
Well, there's a whole other issue here that I think people have a real problem accepting, and that I luckily accepted in about 1998. And that is because of technology. I know it's all scary. George Orwell, oh my God, there's a camera in every room. But you're abandoned privacy. Remember, one of the points of 1984 was that they could not take away what was in people's heads. They could not really take away your thoughts and your feelings and your emotions. So you should probably embrace those as your privacy, because any pictures you take or what you do online or even what you do in your basement, somebody's going to find out about that.
Yeah, privacy is kind of going away.
Yeah, but I think the problem that people have...
We've traded it for convenience.
Well, I mean, there's just it's not even a trade thing. It's just the way it is. There's nothing you could do.
No,
if you want technology...
You can be a hermit without technology.
No, but even then, the Google cameras are getting you.
No, you
if
can,
we
you
want
can shoot
all the
those.
Advantages...
You can shoot them with a gun.
The satellites?
Well, the satellites are tricky, but those don't zoom, basically have no skylights, so Google Earth can't get you. And
yeah.
When those fuckers in the streetcar come at you.
Use Second Amendment remedies?
Yes.
Anyways, so...
Don't retreat from Google Street View.
But the real thing
Reload.
About 1984, the horror of 1984 was not the lack of privacy. The horror of 1984 was the lack of freedom, the lack of free thought, and the lack of the ability of the citizen to criticize the government. Those are the scary things, not the lack of privacy. The lack of privacy was scary only because of the oppressive government. And so long as, well, A, I don't join the Tea Party, and B, the government does not become oppressive, there's nothing to fear from the loss of privacy. Because your privacy was virtual before. It was only a perceived privacy. You actually... You know, people did all sorts of things not realizing they were being recorded. Or realizing they were being recorded and still saying dumb shit. I'm looking at you, Richard Nixon. So, I think that the idea of privacy has always been kind of a trumped up one. But there are two important facts about privacy. One, no matter who can find out what you're doing in the privacy of your home or whatever, that it not be, your freedoms not be infringed upon. And two, that the invasion of your privacy not be used to oppress your, basic Bill of Rights type rights. And there you go, Dave. Okay, end of serious moment. Because I want to address another point that you said. You said, nobody knows why these men are sending, why men continue to send dick pics, right?
I'd said something along those lines.
You said something along those lines.
Probably.
Well,
or if I didn't, that's as good a segue as any to whatever you want to talk about. Let me tell you, I did.
Let me tell you who does know. Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert. So let's talk about this for a brief moment.
I've got to say, though, I'm feeling optimistic about this because if there's one person whose artistic output has shown me that he has a keen and penetrating insight into the wheres and why-fors of the human soul, it is Scott Adams.
That is my opinion, too, Dave. So let's see what Scott Adams has to say. He says, if you have a round peg that doesn't fit in a square hole, do you blame the peg or the hole?
Before you talk, what's his answer?
His answer is you probably blame neither. We don't assign blame to inanimate objects. I agree.
So far, so good.
So far, he sounds wise. This couldn't go wrong.
He sounds wise.
But you might have some questions about the person who provided you with these mismatched items and set you up to fail.
I'm looking at that guy. He might be some kind of pointy-haired boss. So, I bet that's what that guy is.
So he didn't know any better.
He doesn't know how engineers feel.
Skip a paragraph.
My tie is curled up aggressively.
Now consider human males. No doubt you have noticed an alarming trend in the news. Powerful men have been behaving badly, e.g. tweeting, raping, cheating, and being offensive to just about everyone in the world. Can I just take a break here? Let's just slow the train down.
There's a little song that comes to mind here to me.
Yeah.
And that song goes a little like this. One of these things is not like the others.
Yeah, that's for sure.
One of these things just doesn't belong. It's rape.
Yeah,
rape is the thing that's not like the other things.
Tweeting, cheating, and being offensive are all three things which, well, tweeting can be completely harmless. Being offensive is by nature being offensive. Cheating can hurt people's feelings, but it is not a violation of their basic human rights. Which is what raping is.
Yeah, that's...
So let's just separate that one out.
Yeah, that's a little...
So,
yikes.
The current view of such things is that the men are to blame for their own bad behavior. Yeah, I'm pretty
sure.
That
is the current view.
That is the current view.
All right, I'm back on board.
That is what is better than the previous view.
I'm back on board.
That seems right, he says. Obviously, we shouldn't blame the victims. He's got me.
He's dead on.
Bam, bam, bam.
Keen, penetrating insights.
I think we all agree on that point. We do! Thank you, Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert. Blame and shame are society's tools for keeping things under control. I don't know about that. I hope we're not keeping everything in check with shame alone.
No.
We got blame.
That's not enough.
We got shame.
That's all we got.
That's all we got. I hope you guys are feeling ashamed because we don't have jail. We don't have, fines, police, social ostracism. So we don't have any of those.
Well, I think social ostracism, that might be blame, that might be shame. That's a little bit of those.
I don't think that's in those. I think it surpasses those.
It's just shame blame.
Moving on.
It's just shame blame.
The part that interests me, he continues, is that society is organized in such a way that the natural instincts of men are shameful and criminal, while the natural instincts of women are mostly legal and acceptable. What? Now the train, I fell off.
Train just went off the rails.
Scott Adams, what happened? Like, what is that? What does that even mean, Dave? What does he think? I'm a male. My natural instincts are not shameful and criminal. I never feel like my natural instincts are, like, society is really screwing me over. They're not letting me do what my natural instincts are.
Which is tweeting dick pics and raping people, apparently.
Apparently. I didn't realize that. My natural instincts are generally, like, I'm gonna admit, hunger, big one. Okay.
Yeah, that's in there.
Obviously,
desire
I'm motivated
to find food.
Towards sex. I mean, that's just, there's a biological impulse.
Sure.
Those are the two big ones that I consider natural, wherein natural means kind of arising
inherent,
from biology,
imbued from
biology. But
I think all
the rest of my instincts are pretty natural. I have an instinct to protect people. Like, I have a protective instinct, especially family and friends. With my wife, with my dog. I think that is a natural instinct that is neither criminal nor shameful. That's just me. I have a natural instinct to sleep, not criminal or shameful. Feel pretty good about it. Peeing is good, not criminal, not
sometimes
shameful.
Criminal, sometimes shameful.
Criminal can be shameful. I think, hey, if people want to pee in public, just do it in some grass, and, you know, we're probably okay. But peeing up against the side of the building, I understand.
It's taxpayer grass. It's taxpayer grass, Chuck, and they're messing it up.
All right, we'll put peeing and pooing aside for now. So, women, the natural instincts of women are mostly legal and acceptable? What? I don't even understand what that means. What are the natural, like, I guess making babies is his idea of the natural female instinct.
In this case, I think his idea of the natural female instinct is not rape and not dick pics. I don't know. It's a disaster.
Who knows? Let's... In other words, men are born as round pegs in a society full of square holes. Again, never felt like that in my life. B, I'm pretty sure we still pretty much control everything, as we have for thousands of years.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, it is men who mostly set the rules up that you couldn't rape people.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Men write things like, you know, I mean, of course, alongside that goes the whole women as property thing. Which,
yeah, I mean,
know,
I'm not saying they wrote saying those rules for the noblest and most egalitarian
of
reasons. I'm
saying they had it all right. I'm just saying.
Patriarchy's still bad. But it's not a society that is trying to oppress men. And here's the thing that I find probably the most offensive about that is just the assumption that it's basically just like, well, all men are in a constant fight to basically suppress their horrible subhuman urge to rape.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
I think that you have, A...
Not raping is pretty easy, frankly.
And more to the point, like, not raping is very easy.
It's a shamefully low... I mean, you want to talk about shame. It's a shamefully low standard to apply.
Yes.
And to even imply that it's,
but
like,
I
a struggle or that it's hard is stupid.
I don't think that Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert's, point here was...
That can't be emphasized enough, by the way.
Creator of Dilbert. I don't think his point was that... I really don't think this whole thing's about rape. I really think it's more about being sexually aggressive and offensive. Which, you know, would take the tone of this down a whole lot. If
yeah,
he had just
he
not said rape...
That would have been a good thing to do.
That would have been a good start. I still would disagree with him. So the thing about it is if you even think about this in the category of tribal prehistoric man who did not have a complex philosophy and morals and blah, blah, blah.
Or Twitter.
You still would not get very far in that tribal society, I don't think, by raping people. I think that would probably get you killed. Just my thought.
Seems likely.
Yeah. I think the other villagers might get upset with you. That's all I'm saying. Even without a language, even without a set of morals, you know, again, you default to a primal state where, strong men are obviously going to, I mean, let's face it, prehistoric man was not very leftist, probably considered women property, and probably would kill you for raping his property.
I don't know.
Just
I am not an anthropologist.
This is my thought. I don't know. Let's ask an anthropologist. Do you see one in the room?
Nope.
All right. Never mind then. My point is that there's no way that aggressive behavior is acceptable or even understandable as, oh, that's your instinct, so we forgive you, or I don't understand what he's trying to get to. But let's get a little further, shall we?
Oh, if we must. If we must.
To be fair, says Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert, if a man meets a woman and marries the right woman, and she fulfills, quote-unquote, his needs, he might have no desire to tweet his meat to strangers. So apparently, Huma, Anthony Weiner's wife, is to be admonished for not meeting his needs, I suppose. I doubt very highly that that's what was going on.
Seems not super, like, I don't know, it's just crazy.
Well, it's crazy to assume that that's what, that would be what's going on. It's crazy to assume anything about somebody's private life. Everyone is different, he continues, but in general, society is organized as a virtual prison for men's natural desires. I don't have a solution in mind. It's a zero-sum game. If men get everything they want, women lose, and vice versa.
What?
And there's no real middle ground. Because that would look like tweeting a picture of your junk with your underpants still on. Some things just don't have a compromised solution. Scott Adams.
Creator of Dilbert.
I think for a moment, you should consider that in a world of human beings, completely regardless of gender, the consideration of another person's desires being fulfilled would be for them to be free to live their life without being raped or tweeted pictures of people's junk. Look, I don't want women tweeting me naked pictures of them, because that's a whole weird thing. Maybe I'm crazy.
That happened to you that one time, right?
It did happen.
And it was weird.
It was weird, and it was an accident. It wasn't somebody sending me the pictures on purpose. When I was a young man, I may have delighted at the idea of random women tweeting me naked pictures of themselves. But I have matured, and now I find that a creepy idea. A very creepy idea.
Also, I think even as a young man, I think there's a thing where that would have been great. That's an abstract good in theory. Like, you'd think about that, and you're just like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
But if it happened, if you suddenly I think started it'd happening, be weird. Then it would be creepy.
I mean, obviously, if you have a pre-existing relationship with the person, blah, 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 I don't really care.
Yeah, yeah.
People can tweet pictures of their junk however they want.
Duh, yeah.
But we're really talking about, like,
strangers
what exactly?
In the night, are we talking, dick pics.
But also, what are we talking about exactly? Because the thing about the Anthony Weiner case or whatever is we don't really know how many of these were welcomed or warranted or asked for or what was going on exactly. Yeah.
Some weren't, some I don't know about. Because I'm
with the
not
Brett Favre
this
thing, we know that they were unwanted. And, I mean, honestly, like, I just want to know, if anybody knows of a case where a guy just tweeted his junk to some girl and she was totally into it, you know, let me know. I'd be interested. You know, it just seems to me like that would be off-putting, kind of threatening, kind of disturbing to the average person. Just me. So anyways, long term, says Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert, or Dilbert, creator of Scott Adams, either way. I think science will come up with a drug that keeps men chemically castrated for as long as they are on it.
I've got to say, science is a little bit ahead of Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert here. Because chemical castration is a thing.
Yeah.
That exists.
If you want chemical castration, Dilbert, creator of Scott Dilbert, you call me up. I will find a way to make it happen. It sounds bad, he continues, but I suspect that if a man loses his urge for sex, he doesn't miss it. He also doesn't miss it. Men and women would also need a second drug that increases oxygen. Who knows? You know what? Fuck you, Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert. I'm not reading any more of this. Let's just get right to the point. If a human being can't control themselves, then, you know what? Then they're going to be judged as by society as bad. And consequences will be rendered as appropriate, hopefully. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think most men would have any problems controlling their sexual urges or any urges at all. And I think that, you know, not to go on a crazy feminist rant here, but I think that it is probably your culture that continually tells you that men are over-sexualized and need sex all the time. That is lending itself more towards your crazy ideas than actual reality. That's just me, Dave.
Yeah, and I think it's about time we should wrap this up, because we've been going long, long.
Yeah, we have been going long,
but
you know what? But I think,
no,
I think it's a worthy
thought topic,
plus
I agree.
Dilbert, creator of Scott Adams. I mean, that's funny. It's funny that Dilbert man is the one saying this.
Scott Dogbert, creator of Wally. That's a character, right? That's the bald guy?
Is that a bald guy?
I think the bald guy's name is Wally.
What's the manager's name?
I think he's just the pointy-headed
managerio.
I don't know. Oh, man, managerio. Does he wear, like, a fishbowl helmet and fight Spider-Man?
Cuddlebonk. I actually pretended my name was Cuddlebonk McGillicuddy today.
In what context?
All right, see, that's a fun story, Dave. So a friend of mine, his phone died. He got a new iPhone. So he's like, on the Facebook, he's like, he's been on the show actually before. And on the Facebook, he's like, hey, everybody, send me your name via text, and then I can put you in my phone. So I sent him a text that said Cuddlebonk McGillicuddy.
There you go.
And he was like, what? And I was like, that's my name. Put it in your iPhone. Cuddlebunk McGillicuddy. And then he figured out it was me.
Ah. All right, so I think before we wrap it up, my final thought on the whole thing is there's a certain irony in this whole thing. I mean, besides, you know, just the general sort of, you know, good, you know, feminist points that, you know, the world is not designed by someone else as a prison against men. That's stupid. We know that.
To me, it's not even feminism. It's just humanism.
Logic.
It's just also. It's just thinking
also,
for your goddamn
observing
self.
History.
Yeah.
Observing history. But besides those points, to me, there's a certain amount of irony in the fact that Scott Adams, well, possibly not irony, possibly the other thing, possibly it's oddly fitting that Scott Adams is basically blogging a really stupid point about how, you know, men or powerful men have no self-control, given that this is not the first time that Scott Adams has been sort of pilloried for basically writing idiotic things about gender in his blog.
It's true.
So
and also,
that to me is there's a little bit of irony there. I mean,
I don't
maybe
recall.
He identifies because he has no fucking self-control.
Yeah, and it's been years since I read Dilbert, but I don't really recall any strong female characters in that. I mean, not there are any strong characters, period. But
there's the lady
all,
with a triangle haircut and the big
not,
lips. She has big lips.
She doesn't seem to be an engineer or any kind of ranking person.
No, was she an engineer?
I don't remember.
I think she
I don't
might
really
have been.
See a lot of insight into gender relations going on in that comic. It's very
he's about as good as figuring out gender relations as he is drawing those goofy ass lips.
Well, it's all first world problems, and is it any surprise that a guy who, you know, writes a comic about engineering and about office living really doesn't have any clue about how gender relation works? No. Not surprising. Anyways, Dave, there you go. Pilloried. That's a great one.
Pilloried.
That's almost as good as being hoisted on your own petard.
Yeah, that's... Is pilloried, is that when you get put in the stacks, like with
stocks.
The... Stocks?
Sticks.
Right, yeah, that's when you have to go live in the sticks.
No, you have to go live with sticks. And they're all like...
Sharp?
No, man. They're like, I'm sailing in
oh.
World. You know, like that.
That's what you get for being a renegade.
And it's open course. There's and see.
That's what you get for being a renegade.
I don't really know, though.
She took a repetition, but then you got it.
Yes, the pillory, Dave, would be a... Wow, a pillory is real bad. You definitely don't want to be in a pillory, because that's like the stocks, but then there's a foot thing in some of the pillory, too. Oh.
Ouch.
Yeah, you don't want to be in that. That is no good. And that doesn't look comfortable. I don't know. I don't want to be pilloried. But if Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert, were pilloried, it would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
Especially if you had to wear a tie.
Where's your Dogbert now?
Where's your Dogbert now? All right. Well then, I think
we got to wrap that up.
Thing, we will perhaps take a short break and come back with more. I'm trying to think. Does that sound like a good thing to you, Dave?
That sounds like a fine and glorious thing.
A fine and glorious thing. All right. Well, we'll be right back with more. I'm trying to think. This was a bad song choice because it takes forever to get started. So we'll be back. Here they come. All right. There we go. It's the Doobie Brothers. It's Blackwater. It starts out real soft. There's nothing I can do about it.
Starts out really soft, then it gets fucking hard.
Yeah! Rock on! Any minute now. Don't rock on. Alright, here comes the metal part. Da na 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 na. Oh, And oh, Blackwater, welcome back to episode 51 of I'm Trying to Think. Chuck Werner, Dave Stern.
You think the mercenaries named themselves after that Doobie Brothers song?
Oh, Blackwater, keep on shooting innocent brown people, get in your way. What?
Yeah, I think they did.
All right. We do have a listener mail segment today. So that's
listener mail. We loves the listener mail.
Yeah, let's dive right in. Now, Dave, I want to talk about something first. So let's dive right in, but then hit our head on the diving board because I'm stopping us.
It's kind of a comical, physical moment.
So we created a little bit of a mythos with Hillock Joe, if you remember.
Yeah,
I don't really remember how. I just know that we somehow made him into a hillbilly.
We love all of our fans, but some more than others.
And I'm not saying which ones, but...
But Hillock Joe.
Hillock Joe wrote us, and he's really gone deep into the mythos. So much so that I think this almost gets difficult to understand. But nonetheless, we will read the listener mail. Hillock Joe writes, "Dear, I'm trying to think. As someone who has recently found himself more or less accidentally with all the trappings of an adult life, including a house, an adult job, a dog, and a new baby, I'd like to extend my congratulations to Chuck."
Woohoo!
"As for questions for your child, I'd like you to ask the baby if they feel any particular affiliations for sports or culture activities before they have any gender expectations put upon them. What do the gender expectations have to do with sports teams they pick? You pick the sports team where you're born."
I think it's four sports. I think he's trying to say basically is how much... Basically, I think what Hillock Joe wants to piece apart there is
whether gender...
Yeah, basically how much of, you know, gender is cultural versus how much of gender is, you know, based on sex.
I'll just answer that for you.
Mostly cultural.
Mostly cultural. There is some evidence that there may be some gender bias for specific toys, regardless of culture. Certainly monkeys seem to show an affinity for certain toys based on...
Based on bananas, mostly.
Well, the presence or absence of a downstairs banana, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, we don't really know. I mean, monkeys, who knows? And it's an open question, but mostly cultural. We can say that pretty securely. On another topic, writes Hillock Joe. He's pushing it here. He's giving us a lot of topics.
Yeah, a lot to chew on.
"I'd like the expert opinion of the I'm Trying to Think staff." Lucky for him, opinions we give are expert opinions.
We're here.
"The topic of philosophical zombies. Billy Ray and Bobby Joe won't shut up about this topic. Billy Ray," again, this is deep into the mythos now, "claims that the concept of philosophical zombies disproves physicalism. Then Bobby Joe goes off on some sort of weird argument about possibility, and then I get really confused." Now, this sounds confusing. "Granted, this is usually after the third bottle of moonshine." Again, deep into the mythos.
Yep, he's picking up what we're putting down.
"That they get into this, so they get pretty incoherent after a while. To a simple folk like myself, it seems the whole argument boils down to A, assume that physicalism is invalid, therefore physicalism is invalid. It seems like a complicated way of making a circular argument. Am I missing something that makes this argument more interesting? Or should I just leave Billy Ray and Bobby Joe to their drunken ramblings and muskrat shooting? Sincerely, Hillock Joe." Again, deep into the mythos. So, anyways.
We should probably start.
Let's talk about this. Let's start with talking about actually what it is. Because I was actually unfamiliar with this argument, at least labeled this way. So, Dave, do you want to explain very quickly?
Sure, I can do that. Basically, the concept of the philosophical zombie... explained, you know, simply, is basically the idea of a person, which you could say person in this case with or without quotation marks, depending on how you feel. You know, basically,
feel pretty good.
A being which has, you know, essentially all, you know, all of the behavioral, you know, traits and actions and, you know, physical existence of a human, but has no consciousness, no sentience, no, you know, thoughts in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That is the fundamental concept of the philosophical zombie.
Well, I think that you've drawn an important distinction there. The idea is that this thing is an automaton, in that it is all pre-programmed to do and say whatever. Is that what you're saying?
Possibly.
Is that the construct you want to discuss?
Possibly.
Because that's a different construct.
No, because I think the trick of the philosophical zombie, in my mind, is that it is defining consciousness as something non-physical, sort of by its own construction.
Yes.
Because it is basically saying, imagine there's something which is physically exactly like a human, but lacks consciousness, which therefore implies that consciousness is not a physical part of the human.
We could talk about this in two different constructs. First, the point Joe brings up, which is valid, which is the circular argument. If you say to me, well, imagine there's a person who has they talk, they think, they can do computations, they can answer questions, they have memory, but they don't have consciousness. What do you do about that? You know, whatever. Well, it's a circular argument. Show me what consciousness is, and I'll tell you what happens when we remove it. Because I've seen lots of people who are in a vegetative state. Well, I haven't seen a lot, but I've heard of a lot of people who are in a vegetative state.
You just hang around that ward of the hospital. It's a little creepy.
So that's pretty easy to figure out there. We can watch brain damage and see what happens. The very simple answer to me is, what happens when a person gets Alzheimer's and they start to lose their memory and they start to become a different person? Often their personality changes. They become angry, irritable, things like that. They don't remember things that have happened to them, and they start to change as a person. Did the damage to their brain damage their consciousness? And therefore, isn't consciousness, say, a projection of physical reality? So really, it's dependent on that physical structure? If I bang Dave over the head real hard, but manage not to kill him, but, you know, cut some parts of his brain apart and stuff, give him some nice lacerations on the old gray matter, he is going to be a different person, I promise you. And that is all as a result of physical damage. So consciousness very easily then becomes, to me, obviously a projection of physical qualities. But otherwise, it's a circular argument. You cannot show me consciousness that exists in the person who has it. In fact, the argument folds against itself because I can very easily say, well, this person on the left appears to have consciousness but does not. And this person on the right has consciousness. And they are completely indistinguishable. So then what? I mean, saying the person on the left has jujuba. He has mojo. He has chutzpah. The person on the right has none. Find it for me. You know what I mean? I'm just making up words and assigning them to people. So at that level, the argument not only folds back against itself, but it's circular. You invent a concept that you apply to a person and then say, well, this thing that is identical does not have that thing. In Dave's instance, so say that the person responds as if they have consciousness or quote-unquote consciousness. They respond like any other human being, but it is revealed somehow. They don't have thoughts, memories, or whatever, right? It's kind of a Turing test at that point. I don't really see the consciousness in either case there. You could say, oh, a human has consciousness, but this construct that you brought me does not. Data from Star Trek does not have consciousness because we built him. And I would say to you, why? And again, what is consciousness? If you could say, this chatbot does not have consciousness, it was just programmed responses, okay. The difference between the chatbot and the human being is not that the chatbot lacks consciousness. The difference is that it lacks memories and all the other structures that we associate with personhood. I wouldn't call the chatbot a person, but I would call Data a person. Data has all the signs of consciousness. But this is me, a guy who believes that consciousness is an emergent phenomena. And as Dave and I discussed the last episode or the episode before, 49 or 50.
A few ago.
We talked about transcendence. I think it's a transcendent, quote-unquote, property, which just means that it is a property which arises from physical things, but it itself is not a physical thing. We have been discussing this argument about dualism a long, long time. I mean, Descartes is one of the classic cases of a guy who talks almost exclusively about dualism and also XY coordinates. to me, you're no further along today than you are then because it's still made up boo-boo.
Let me say we're a little further than we are then, I think, in certain ways, if only because...
Well, the pineal
with
gland.
The march. One, yeah, we've discovered that the soul doesn't live in the pineal gland. Was that Descartes? Was it the actual soul or consciousness?
I don't think that it was the consciousness lived there. It was that was the physical tie for him, I think, between the world of the spirit or consciousness and the world
right, of and the world of the physical.
Physical, yeah.
Was the pineal gland.
I think that's what he... I think that was him.
Yeah, and then there's a certain amount of... I guess just by sheer advances, you know, we've got, you know, fMRIs now. So I think we are learning more and more basically about, you know, the brain signals that generate this these sort of emergent phenomena of consciousness and feelings and thoughts. But so the people, the dualists kind of have to retreat into a a smaller corner.
Exactly. They just retreat and they can keep retreating for as long as they want.
Because there's always something.
There's
always
something. And that is...
That's science.
It's the... To me, the parallel is the God concept, which continually retreats.
It's kind of the big ultimate dualism.
Yes.
As more and more stuff gets explained.
But the whole philosophical zombie argument is, as Dave was pointing out earlier, the Chinese box argument. We were talking about this in the break. The Chinese box, what else is there? The Matrix, you said?
Yeah, it used to have some kind of... It was its own philosophical example with a sort of fancy philosophical name. I think they would call it like the sense experience machine or something. But it's
like
the fucking Matrix.
It's just the fucking Matrix, yeah.
But yeah, really, I would say actually the Chinese Room is probably the most relevant, which just as a quick summary, if people don don't know, it's a... I think it was John Searle as the philosopher. It is sort of a response to kind of... I think mostly kind of Turing and the Turing test and, you know, machine intelligence as an idea. And basically, it's the idea of basically there's someone in a room and, you know, basically the room is basically to translate Chinese. And, you know, this person does not know Chinese, but they have a series of algorithms. Okay, you're handed this character, you hand back this, you know, translation. And it appears like a perfect, you know, intelligent Chinese translating machine. Is that intelligence? But I think the difference, like, that seems like an almost identical
example. It's a very similar question.
But to me, the thing that makes the Chinese Room more interesting, essentially, is that machine intelligence and the kind of the limits of what intelligence means in machines versus in, you know, human intelligence is a somewhat more interesting question than the consciousness thing, because, I know, there's more meat to it, I think.
Possibly. The thing for me... is it always baffles me about people who talk about dualism is that you can tell, you can sit across the table from me and argue about consciousness existing in humans, and obviously animals don't have consciousness, and you can't make a robot that's conscious, so you can't make a truly artificial intelligence, etc., etc. Meanwhile, you're sitting across the table from me. I have absolutely no proof that you're intelligent or conscious. You're just a machine spitting stuff out at me. And I can say stuff back to you, and then you retort. But I don't see any of the intelligence working. I don't see the consciousness happening. Again, Matrix, but it's just a matter of... I take it on faith that you have consciousness, because that's what we just that's what we say. We say people have consciousness.
Yeah, we kind of
for years we said people had a soul, and now churches one of my wife's favorite things in the world is this thing. I don't know if it really happened or if it's just kind of urban legendary, but of two churches arguing over whether or not dogs had souls through their little signs out front, you know.
Right, right. The signs that have the cute, the funny jokes.
Right. The Catholic Church was like, dogs have souls. And the Presbyterian or Protestant church or what have you was like, no, dogs don't have souls. Dogs don't go to heaven. Blah, blah, blah. It's the soul thing. Everybody believed in that for centuries. Now, I mean, I don't believe in a soul. I don't know if you believe in a soul, Dave. I assume you do not believe in a soul.
I assume that whole kind of between churches argument, that was before Don Bluth, right? Because he settled that.
Did he?
Yeah. All dogs.
All dogs. Do go to heaven.
All dogs go to heaven.
But do they have souls?
Also, all dogs go to heaven, too.
But, Dave, God could just make a copy of
them. There might have been a third one, too.
God could just make a copy of the dog that exists in heaven. Doesn't mean it has a soul.
So it's kind of
a
philosophical dog zombie?
What if God doesn't back up his data? You know what I mean? Like, what if I get to heaven and I'm like, oh, Grandpa, it's so good to see you again, and there's so much more I want to talk to you about, and he's kind of like... yeah, I can't wait to talk about all that stuff. And I'll be like, remember the time? And he'll be like, yeah, I remember that. And it becomes obvious to me over the course of my time in heaven that he doesn't remember. And there's like, and then I find out God didn't back up his data. So he lost a whole bunch of souls. And then he just kind of had to make them from scratch. He's like, oh, I'll just slap this together. You know?
Not really.
Well, it's a question. Frankly. It's a question of, you know, this is the ultimate killer puzzler, Dave.
Wait, it's so, always so it this. Puzzles killers?
No. I don't know.
Well, if anyone should be thinking about
this. It's always this.
If anyone should be thinking about this, it's killers. Let's be honest.
I put a big cap on your head, right? With cables coming out of it. Kind of like your, what's that, the machine that the Charles Xavier uses?
Cerebro?
Cerebro, Dave. I put a motorcycle helmet with garden hoses coming out of it on your head, right?
Like Cerebro, yes.
Like Cerebro. And I hook that
how it
via
works.
USB to my computer. Actually, it's parallel because I can't. Anyways, it's old. It's old technology. I hook it into the parallel port because I had to get it. I had to find an old like 486. And anyways, the garden hoses with the motorcycle helmet hook up to the parallel port of my 486. I pull a big lever on the wall, cha-ching! Copy your consciousness, your entire identity, who you are, everything about you, into a computer. And the computer starts talking. You know, he's chatty. He's chatty Dave the computer. Now, that's a weird concept already, okay, but you can kind of understand. Well, you would point to that and say, that's not me, right?
Probably.
You'd be like, that's not me. I'm still here.
That's
I'm
a computer.
Dave, right?
Come on, computer.
That's a computer.
Quit shitting around.
Now, Dave.
Computer.
Dave.
Yeah?
The motorcycle helmet with the garden hoses hooked up to the parallel port of my 486. I pull the switch, and the way that it actually works is it erases all the content of your brain and makes, is it a copy? Is it a transfer of you on the computer? You start talking. You
are a
pile of meat in the corner.
This is the Captain Kirk example.
Which one? Are you the computer now? Is that you? It's the same mechanics, but you died in the process. It's not just Captain Kirk. It's Riker went through this. You know, there was another Riker.
The transporter kills you and makes you come back to life every time.
Right. Does it.
Terrifying technology.
Does it. And that's it. Like, what is it? So if the mechanics are the same, but you die in the process, so there's no Dave to say, I'm not in that computer. Is the computer you now? Identity is an illusion. The whole concept of consciousness is an illusion. It's an illusion generated by your brain. It's an easy way for your brain to deal with the fact that all these non-connected, really, impulses and thoughts that conflict with each other, the memory that is faulty and messy, all those things coming together and just pouring into a messy soup in the middle of your brain. Your brain interprets it and throws up a consciousness. It's a manifestation. It is an emergent phenomena of your brain cells and your electrical whatnots. You tell yourself that it's you. You have the concept that it is you and that identity of you. But you only exist, as I've said in an episode or two ago, tangentially. You exist in a moment. And then you're gone and replaced with something that to everybody around you and to you yourself looks just like you. But it's not the you that was just happening, and in 10 years, it won't be the you that happened then. So, the whole philosophical zombie thing, to me, the whole concept, the whole arguments, are dodgy theories, well, not theories, dodgy hypotheses that people come up with to try and give themselves comfort in the moments when they realize that they don't really exist, that there's nothing there's no ghost in the machine, that there is nothing. A person is essentially nothing.
It's a machine made of meat.
Yeah. And people think that's sad. People get upset. I mean, that's existential angst right there. Like, I don't really exist. I'm just a... So what? It doesn't change anything about about your entire life. The fact that you aren't really there doesn't mean that the memories that you have aren't fun. It doesn't mean that when you wake up tomorrow morning that you have no purpose in life. It doesn't actually change anything. Actually, one would hope that you could draw some comfort from it in feeling a little less egotistical about how important you fucking are.
Yeah, that's always kind of one of the weird things I find about skeptic philosophers and kind of materialist philosophers and sort of the reaction to them in a lot of ways is, like, I know I think Hume, you know, one of the great, you know, obviously great Enlightenment skeptic and empiricist, like, was just asked this, I know, a lot, and yeah, I think you hear a lot of this with kind of the modern, you know, sort of, you know, Daniel Dennett, your, you know, kind of new atheist, you know, Darwinist materialist philosophers. It's just like, well, if all of this is true, how do you live? And it's just like, well, I mean, these things may be, you know, the reality of the world, but they also don't change, you know, the experiential facts on the ground. No. I mean,
just because I don't exist doesn't mean I stop feeling like I do. I just have to realize that I don't. It should make me fear death a lot less. And that's the real horror of existentialism for everybody. Well,
not even existentialism, just the horror of existence, period.
Well, I mean, if existence precedes essence, then essence becomes nothing when existence ceases. Right?
Right.
Existential angst is thanatos. It is the fear of death. To me. I don't know. I think that's ultimately what it all comes down to. Because once you realize that your existence can end, and once you know that essence is just something applied to existence, then you understand that everything around you is temporal, that everything around you will stop, that you will stop, and then thanatos, boom, fear of death. And it's a cycle, kind of. But anyways.
It's kind of like a cycle, except it doesn't repeat.
It's more like, it's not a cycle because it doesn't come back on itself.
It's a thought process. It's the
but
five
it's what I would say. It's like
it's
a
stages.
It's like statement response.
It's like a path.
It's like statement response is what I actually kind of mean. It's like, you know, flip the switch, the light comes on, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so when you flip the switch to realize that essence is nothing, then light comes on, thanatos. That's kind of your metaphor. Shut up, turn on your thanatos. And don't leave it on because then your electricity bill will go up. Point is, Dave, that if I understand that life is a temporal thing, then hopefully I can kind of put it into perspective and not feel so afraid that it's going to stop existing. Because millions of other entities have gone through the same thing continually. Every time you change, you're not really the thing you were before. Is that so damning? Is that so upsetting? So I really think that people should try to think about it in a way that gives them perspective. And then that perspective can give you happiness. Because as I say, Dave, happiness is managing expectations. And if you understand the expectations of, you know, self, identity, and existence, you will realize that there is not much expectation there. And thus, you can live up to it pretty easily.
Life lessons.
There you go. Because, you know, I mean, to me, there's the ego, it's this part of you, your, you know, whatever. It's just kind of a manifestation of the phenomena that is you, that says, you know, you're not good enough, you're not doing enough, you know, your life is short, you're going to die, and you're not going to, nobody's going to remember you, nobody cares, blah, blah, blah. And I think if you can beat the shit out of your ego, you can live a much happier life. You're like, he's like, nobody really cares about you. And you're like, well, whatever, because they don't really exist. They're just going to die too. And he's like, ooh, gut shot. I mean, that might not really be your answer to your ego, but, you know, find whatever answer makes you comfortable.
Something.
I'm not actually
saying
that.
You got to get something.
I'm not saying that I fuck everybody because they don't really exist either. More of the point.
Yeah, that would be a little solipsistic.
It's just very.
That would be a little solipsistic.
Well, I mean, if I don't exist either, is that really solipsistic?
Okay, no, that's a nihilistic.
That's completely nihilistic. Yeah. No, yeah. I just mean
solipsism minus one.
You
that's
have to
nihilism.
Find you have to find out the questions that you're asking yourself secretly, you know, in that subconscious area that are giving you the dread. And the sadness and the despair. And then answer those questions. And it can, you can't answer them unless you know what's what about the actual condition of existence. Wow, Dave. How do you like that? Everybody out there, let me imitate the listener for you right now. All right.
That was a dead-on impersonation of a listener.
That's a dead-on impersonation.
Dead on.
Hey, wake up. Wake up, buddy. Come on. We're going to talk about fun stuff again now. Okay, Dave, talk about some fun stuff. No, but seriously, Hillock Joe, I don't know. Hopefully that answers his question. Is there anything else about philosophical zombies
I think we covered all of it and then a bunch of other stuff.
Dave, you look a little bit like... I think we're good. Dave,
a little glazed.
Dave, look... for the listeners out there. Dave, this is what Dave's face is telling me right now. My God. Shut up.
Well, one of us does have to edit this.
Oh, I see how it is. Oh, one of us has to edit it.
It's kind of a face of just like, well, that's going to take some doing.
You just listen to it, and then you're like, all right, that sounds good.
Yeah, that part will probably be fine.
Hey, Tolkien was never edited. That's all I'm saying.
Man, that explains Tom Bombadil.
Yeah, it does explain Tom Bombadil. Because if there was an editor, he would have been like, what is this all about? Because this guy doesn't fit the story at all. And then he does nothing for 3 books. I mean, couldn't we just cut him?
Yeah, a lot of singing.
He does some
singing. A lot
singing,
of singing.
And then he's out.
They could just get the sword.
It also just explains Radagast. You're like, why is this guy in here? He just sits there. He likes aminals. And he's brown. I mean, come on. But anyways, yes, philosophical zombies, I think, is a circular argument, basically. Q-E-A-D.
All right.
All right, you know what it's time for, Dave?
Probably time to wind on down.
Shots.
Ease on down the road. It's time for shots.
Yeah. 16.
Shots, 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 shots.
Shots, 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 shots.
That's a lot of shots.
Yeah. I didn't do it rhythmically, though.
No.
We should have a shots episode where we do shots.
Oh, there's nothing
good
about that.
Liquor usually makes me fall to sleep. I don't know. It makes me
fall
around
sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that might, you know, but I'm willing to do it, Dave.
We can experiment. We can give it a shot.
Fans, if you want a shots episode of I'm Trying to Think, you got to write us or post on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
Because otherwise,
we'll figure it
out. Yeah,
we'll figure it out.
We depend on your input. Vaguely. All right, Dave, is there anything else you want to say about anything?
No, I think I'm glazed over and shell-shocked and ready to go.
You have nothing.
We covered all the things.
Your eyes are dead.
Cold and dead. Cold. It's like two fish inside my head.
Cold, dead eyes are leering out from you. I'm beginning to wonder if you have consciousness.
I feel like a philosophical zombie.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Not by the definition of philosophical zombie, but I still feel like it.
If a philosophical zombie feels like a philosophical zombie, does it have consciousness?
Well, can it feel?
Can it feel?
Is feeling just one of the qualia? Is that just one of the, you know, things of consciousness?
So, oh man. But what if it does feel? Does that make it conscious?
What's consciousness, again?
What's consciousness? I'll tell you what consciousness is.
If there's one thing we want to, you know, teach people on this show anytime we talk about philosophy ever, it's that it's all just, when you drill down deep enough into any philosophical concept, it's just, what word is it that needs to be defined? That's what it always comes down to. Wittgenstein, like, you know, he has the first half of his career where, you know, he basically becomes, you know, the Lord Godhead of the logical positivist and, you know, writes the Tractatus Logico Philosophy, you know, that whole thing.
Right.
And then there's the second half of his career where he just kind of thinks about it for a sec, scraps a lot of that stuff, and is just like, all philosophy is language problems. And he was dead fucking right.
I don't think all philosophy is language problems. I think there are true arguments in philosophy that should be discussed, but I think there's a lot of stuff where it's like, wait, do you mean that word?
Yeah, even those arguments that are legitimate differences and could go either way are so often just, once you just drill down deep into them enough, you find out that it's just you think consciousness means this, and I think consciousness means that. Or you think justice means this, and I think justice means that. Or you think, you know, I don't know, evil is this, and I think evil. You know, it always just drills down to eventually you hit the word that you either don't understand or disagree on.
Wow. That's a thing. I don't even know, you know. Whew, Dave. That's a thing. Also,
absolutely.
It's fun to say Wittgenstein. So I really
Wittgenstein,
recommend.
Wittgenstein. I remember, this is one of those things where I'm getting it, I don't remember the order, and I totally read the book about it, too. Did Wittgenstein attack Karl Popper with a poker, or did Karl Popper attack Wittgenstein with a poker?
I don't remember, actually.
I think it was Wittgenstein who attacked Karl Popper with a poker, because I know the book was called Wittgenstein's Poker.
But
I don't remember.
What if it was Wittgenstein's poker, but Karl Popper was using it against him?
I don't know.
We don't know how to interpret that. I got nothing.
All right. Man, if I wasn't completely drained from listening to you, I would make some sort of joke about falsification.
Dave,
here.
Drained. I mean, come
drained.
On.
Drained.
It
was thorough. It was thorough. There was a lot going on.
But it's talking about the existential angst of
it's
living.
Draining.
And
it's draining.
I mean, it's an important topic. Like Phil Collins' Easy Lover, which most people probably don't realize this, but the song was written by Philip Bailey. With Phil Collins and another guy, and it actually appeared first on Bailey's album. It does appear on Phil Collins' hits, though. So
that was suddenly a different thing.
All right. Well, anyways, thank you for listening to episode 51. Dave is more glazed by Phil Collins than he is by anything else. But
whiplash.
Yeah.
I've got whiplash.
Whiplash.
We'll be back flash for is whipped.
Episode 52. As always, thank you for listening. Become a fan on Facebook. Do all that good stuff. And she's the kind of girl you dream of.
Hold up. Never forget.
See you later.
Goodbye, folks.
He's doing the high part, right?
Phil Collins super team.
Yeah, it's like a super group kind of. You know what's a? You know what's a? If you really want to get glazed over, I got one word for you.
Fine.
Studio.
Whew.